Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the earnings conference call of Mahindra Holidays and Resorts India Limited Q4 and FY24. As a reminder, all participants' lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star, then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Kavinder Singh. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Good evening, everyone, and a very warm welcome to our Quarter 4 and FY24 earnings call. On the call with me today, we have Mr. Ram Mundra, our Interim CFO. You may have seen our quarterly and annual results and investor presentation, which is being referred to in our remarks today on the stock exchanges and our company website. I know we have uploaded a little late, and that's because the board meeting ended at that time. But even if you have not had a chance to go through them, I would try to take you through the numbers, the key highlights. But before I get into the numbers, I would like to mention that at an industry level, in the open-format hospitality, since we are a vacation ownership business, therefore I'm talking at the industry levels, occupancy and ADRs both increased in Q4. In February 2024, occupancy of 73% was observed with ADRs at around 8,900, and these are 8% higher than post-pandemic rates of February 2023. Q4 domestic air passenger traffic continues to be higher than last year, up by 5% on a year-on-year basis. Coming back to Mahindra Holidays, this year we have crossed a significant milestone of adding 20,000 members approximately and reaching a cumulative member base of 2.98 lakhs. We have been able to achieve the highest-ever membership sales value, including upgrades of rupees 824 crores, up by 16% year-on-year. We have achieved the highest-ever upgrades of rupees 218 crores, a growth of 16% YOY, demonstrating the satisfaction of our existing members. Our cash position stands at 1,383 crores as on 31st March 2024. We have received income tax refund of rupees 66 crores, which includes interest of rupees 6.5 crores. Our deferred revenue has increased by rupees 269 crores to rupees 5,595 crores. Our members enjoyed superior service delivery, new immersive experiences at our resorts, resulting in 85% occupancy on the expanded inventory base that we have. During the year, in Q2, occupancy was impacted due to heavy rainfall and landslide in Himachal Pradesh and Uttarakhand, and in Q3 due to flooding in Sikkim and slower recovery in Himachal and Uttarakhand. Improved digital penetration in India is helping us accelerate our member additions through digital route. Our revamped digital infrastructure, use of technology across touchpoints, along with higher member satisfaction, has helped us deliver 59% of the member additions through the referral and digital routes in Q4 and 57% in FY24. As we speak, we are unlocking the power of data through advanced analytics, data science-based propensity models to improve efficiencies and drive growth in member spends, collections, referrals, and upgrades. Our in-house developed tool, Resort Inventory Yield Optimization, helps in inventory optimization. Our online booking in this year is at 82%, 76% of it came through our mobile app. Let me start with inventory. We are committed to doubling 5,000 rooms level to 10,000 room level, our inventory base by FY30, and we have accelerated the inventory addition this year. We have commenced two new greenfield projects, 236 keys at Ganpati Phule and 150 keys at Theog in Himachal. We completed one acquisition, a 72-key resort in Jaipur. We completed one expansion project, which was at Goa, one of our resorts, making Goa Asnora as the largest resort in our system with 244 keys. And we have one ongoing at Kanda Ghat. And this resort, Kanda Ghat Resort, is being expanded to make it a 257-key flagship resort. All of these actions lead to 835 crores of CapEx, which is underway right now for five greenfield, one brownfield, and acquisition projects. and with a total estimated keys that will come through this would be about 690. This year, our inventory base expanded by 387 keys to 5,327 keys. Public-private participation is an integral part of the inventory expansion strategy. We ramped up our efforts, started engaging with various state governments to identify suitable land parcels or resorts to be taken through the PPP route. We are running a resort now in Jhanjeli, Himachal, in Mandi district through PPP engagement. Other PPP actions include signing a concession agreement for MTTC Harihareshwar Resort in Maharashtra, which happened in this quarter. We have an in-principle approval with the Odisha government for two land parcels. We have signed a memorandum of understanding with Uttarakhand government for investment of rupees 1,000 crores. Land scouting is going on. Tamil Nadu government for about 800 crores investment. In addition, we are exploring various other states and discussions are underway. I'll move on from here to the sustainability ESG. Our sustainability targets include carbon neutrality by 2040 through EP100, RE100 and science-based targets. I'm happy to report 24 of our resorts are net zero waste to landfill certified. We added 20 odd resorts in FY24. We added 6 new resorts as the Green Resorts Platinum, thereby taking our total resorts which are certified by IGBC as Green Resorts Platinum. Now we have 17 resorts of Mahindra Holidays which are platinum certified. Solar power now is streaming, is now 26% of our total energy is now coming through the solar power. Our goal is to have 100% renewable energy by 2050, but we will achieve much earlier. 62% of the total water consumption in our resorts is recycled. Water consumption is recycled. And two of our resorts are net water positive. One of our resorts, Madikeri in Coorg, is India's first resort net zero certified in all three categories, net zero waste, energy and water. Let me move on to the financial highlights. Our quarter four, excluding one-offs, and turned out to be another milestone quarter. Total income at about 378 crores, which is up 14%. On a year-on-year basis. All the numbers are year-on-year basis. EBITDA at about 96 crores, 14% up. EBITDA margin at 25.4%, 20 bps up YOY basis. Our profit before tax up by 23%. Profit before tax margin up by 100 basis points and stands at 12.5%. Profit after tax up by 25% year-on-year. Margin up by 90 basis points YOY at 9.4%. Our resort income stands at a healthy all-time high, 86 crores in this quarter. FY24, again, we achieved highest ever total income at about 1,424 crores, up by 12% year-on-year. EBITDA at about 406 crores, which is 15% YOY. EBITDA margin up by 90 basis points and stands at 28.5%. PBT at rupees 213 crores, 16% YOY. PBT margin at 15%, 60 bits YOY up. PAT at rupees 158 crores, 16% increase YOY. PAT margin at 11.1%, 50 basis points up on the YOY basis. Resort income at rupees 337 crores against the highest ever. Deferred revenue I have already mentioned. Cash position I have already mentioned. Let me move on to the Holiday Club Resorts. Despite the current geopolitical situation and a weak consumer sentiment, HCR has delivered a fantastic Q4 results, achieving an operating profit of 6.8 million euros in quarter four and leading to a full year operating profit of 5 million euros. Quarter four revenue from timeshare was up by 9% YOY on account of higher sales, better realization. Also, renting revenue grew by 24% YOY. Spa hotel occupancies, while they remained at last year level, at a very high level, and they have also outperformed the local hospitality market in Finland, but the weak consumer sentiment continues to affect in-resort spending at spa hotels. Finance costs have increased due to the rising Euribor rates. While real estate continues to be under pressure in a high interest rate scenario, timeshare demand has picked up due to its relatively lower transaction price for the customer. Timeshare allows for partial ownership of a second home, which travelers are considering more favorable given the current macroeconomic situation. Current geopolitical situation is being monitored closely and focused on implementing cost efficiency measures continue. On a consolidated level, our quarter four again turned out, excluding one-off, turned out to be the highest ever. Total income at 828 crores, up 13%. EBITDA at 211 crores, up 8%. PBT at 102 crores, up 28%. PBT margin at 12.3%, 140 bips up on a YOY basis. FY24, if I were to look at on the consolidated level, excluding one-offs, highest ever total income at about 2,810 crores, up by about 8.3%. Highest ever EBITDA at rupees 623 crores, up by about 3.3%. PBT stands at rupees 154 crores. To conclude, if I were to look at the opportunity, in the last few years, you may have seen record number of airports getting built. 75 new airports were built in 10 years. This has led to better connectivity, and we know that another 75 will get built by 2030. With better connectivity, ramping up of travel infrastructure, tourism industry will keep growing at both existing and new destinations. We are noticing that our country, people are spending more on travel and tourism. There is a significant shift from gathering material pleasure to making happy memories through meaningful experiences. That augurs well for us. And the base of India's affluent consumers is estimated to grow at 13% CAGR, which is actually higher than the overall population growth. Demand is outpacing supply. This is evident in the average room rates across the country. Supply will take time to get executed. Therefore, the situation will continue for a while. Indian cities are most under-penetrated on hotels compared to other Asian counterparts. Branded hotel inventory in a city like Jakarta is 2 times of Delhi NCR. Beijing has 8.5 times that of Delhi NCR. Tokyo 4.7 times and Singapore 2.5 times of Delhi NCR. This signifies that we have significant headroom for tourism growth in India, and we at Mahindra Holidays are well poised to take advantage of the leisure travel boom in India through key strategies which will allow us to take advantage of the growing discretionary income amongst affluent homes, thereby realizing the huge potential of our target market in India. On that note, I will close my opening comments. Thank you for your time this evening. I now open the floor for questions and answers.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and 1 on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and 2. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Himanshu from Dolat Capital. Please go ahead.
Hello.
Yes.
Hello.
Please go ahead, Himanshu.
Yeah. So congratulations on very good set of numbers and for crossing 20,000 members addition. So first question is, can you provide an outlook on member additions that we would be aspiring for in FY25? Some color surrounding that.
Okay.
Gross member additions.
Okay. By the way, whatever member additions we share are the net member additions, net of everything. So these are the net member additions, 20,000. And the way when we look ahead in this year, we have 3-4 things going for us. Number one, we, as you can see, post-COVID, we moved from 12,000 level to some 16,000 or 17,000 level roughly. And then we have moved up to now 20. So you can see that whatever we have been saying, we have been very consistent that our aim is to double our inventory. And if we double our inventory, then obviously we have enough inventory to cater to new members. And therefore, the new member additions can be actually derived from our inventory addition plans. But coming specifically to the year that we are in now, we have our strategies to tap the corporates. Now, this is something that we tried in FY24. It's working very well for us. So we are going to accelerate corporate. When I say corporate, it means retail sales in corporate employees, amongst corporate employees, where obviously people would enjoy our proposition, and it's also easier to target larger numbers by going to a corporate. So that's one big strategy that will lead to growth. The second strategy that we have is that can we sell more and more digitally, including through remote sales. So that's another initiative that's going on. We also have another initiative that can we sell our product online. and that is another thing that's being going to be piloted in this year. We are also using lead scoring tools so that we are able to score the leads for better conversion, which leads to higher productivity at the sales level. We are also quite aware that as our new resorts keep coming, the network effects will go up. As we have seen in quarter four, you may have noticed 59% of our sales came through digital and referrals. In a quarter where there is a very huge number that we delivered, and out of that 59% coming through digital referrals shows that your existing members will become your biggest promoters, which will help you to grow the business even further. Normally, we never give guidance on what numbers we will sort of deliver, but definitely you can see that you know, we already delivered approximately 400 rooms, and if we have to double from 5,000 to 10,000, obviously the rate of room additions itself will accelerate, and in line with that, member additions can easily be sort of, you know, back of the envelope can be calculated.
Sure, sir. Just like a continuation on this particular question from a longer term perspective, where will we be comfortable with member to room ratio below which we would not allow it to slip? Where this ratio we would be more comfortable on a longer term basis?
So, Himanshu, what happens is that inventory comes in lumps and member additions come fairly linearly. So what happens is sometimes you may find that our member to room ratio have fallen down to 52, 53, and right now we are at about 56 level. Now, I don't think we should get worried, because if you have more inventory, which means you can sell more, and that only will create a healthy pressure inside to sell more memberships. Equally, if for some time you remain at even 50, it's fine, because people will be more encouraged to sort of, you know, aggressively chase more member additions because there is capacity available. So I am saying that we are not going to stop inventory, because the board has clearly taken a decision that over the next 5 to 6 years is where we have huge tailwinds, and we must run inventory additions ahead of member additions. So by when you run inventory additions ahead of member additions, it's bound to happen that this ratio will fall. But it is always good to have capacity ahead of the demand, and demand can chase capacity, rather the other way around, which actually is not good from any point of view that you look at.
Sure, sir. Very helpful. Two more questions, sir. One, can you just guide on the India business cost side, especially on the member acquisition cost side? Do we see a room over there where this number may come down as the member base, on a per member basis, as the member base keeps increasing? And what would be, if yes, what would be the levers for that, that can drive this sales and marketing or member acquisition cost?
Okay. So at a very high level, have you observed that our sales and marketing expenses for the full year have, in the Reg 33 format, if you may see, they have remained for the full year flat, even though we delivered significant amount of growth in the member additions. So for example, I know unfortunately the figures may have not, may not have been able to see the figures, because we kind of uploaded it immediately after the board meeting, and board meeting ran a little longer. So sales and marketing expenses last year was 215 crores. This time it is 212.3 crores at a higher member base. So you can already see that our ability to bring down the cost of acquisition is being played out as we speak. So you are right, the economies of scale to some extent will play out. To some extent, what happens is that you are constantly investing in the future capability. So it will never be linear that, oh, right, this time they could hold the price, cost, and they on a per member basis. For example, if you take 212 crores on 20,000 base and 215 crores on a 17,000 base, so it may appear that, we have done a very, very good job in terms of, and even if you were to look at our value sales, it is up by about 16% at a full year level. And on the other hand, if you look at the sales and marketing expenses, they degrew by 1.2%. So what I'm saying is that productivity, economies of scale are playing out, and I feel these are the levers. You are right in identifying these are the levers we have to press more. But remember one thing, that it will never be a linear equation, because sometimes you'll be investing more on building new capabilities, setting up more sales offices, you know, hiring people, training a little more. All that happens typically. So you do not see them, you know, but on a long-term basis, if you track us for the last 5 years, there is a secular trend of our cost of acquisition going down. You can see that. At one point in time, it used to be some 27-28%. We are down to now some 23-odd% is what I see. So for this full year, we are at about 22.8%, 23%. And last year, we were at 25.1%. So you can see there is already something has come in. Now, it's not a linear equation, I would still like to say that. I mean, oh, they have done at 20,000, 23%. So when they do 25,000, 24, 23, whatever the number comes, these guys are going to further bring it down. I mean, may happen, may not happen, because you are constantly investing in the future, also building the brand, because these also include the brand building spends.
Sure, sir. Very, very helpful. And last question on HCRO side. Can you provide some color means at the time of acquisition in the first couple of years, you were doing close to around 12-13 million euros of EBITDA. Last 2 years, I understand the economies have been challenged on that part, and there had been impact of Russia-Ukraine war also, and we have delivered decent performance in that backdrop. But where do we see that business going ahead from here on?
Yeah.
When do we see delivering the higher numbers that we were delivering earlier?
Good. Very important, very relevant, and very insightful question, Himanshu. See, if you really look at slide 48 on our investor deck, and maybe if not now, later on, you can have a look. You know, our best year was FY 2018, with 165 million euro of revenue and about 12 million euro of operating profit. If you look at that versus today, we are at 142.3 million euro of, so almost 23 odd euros, 23 million euros less in terms of turnover, and 7 million euros odd less in the operating profit. So the point here is very clear that if we are able to start, you know, running up on our revenue, the profits will follow here, because the business model intrinsically is robust. If you see, barring FY 2021 and FY 2022, when we had full-blown COVID, where we had negative numbers on EBITDA, in the last 2 years, immediately after the COVID got sorted, we, despite the Russia-Ukraine war, we have delivered 2 years in a row, 5 million euro EBITDA. I am extremely confident that in the coming year, despite the Russia-Ukraine war, despite the economy issues that they face, we are going to do better than this. And why so? Why so? Because timeshare is reinventing itself in that area. There are a lot of new timeshare destinations that we are opening up. In fact, very recently we were there and we were looking at it, what are the new opportunities, and some very good opportunities have been signed up for them to open new timeshare destinations. And you know, in this business, the timeshare makes money. Spa hotels obviously are a way to get customers there. So I think even if the situation remains what it is today, we are going to see a very significant upside on the EBITDA. Having said that, if the situation were to slightly improve, which may happen because things cannot go so low, remain so low in Europe for a long time, that too in Scandinavian countries. So it is quite likely that if the situation were to improve, we will see even a bigger kicker, because the business is set up very well. The costs have been dropped down to bare bones. As we speak, we are further reducing the costs in the resorts. And we also know how much price, at what price, how much timeshare we can sell. So we have very strong granular data points through which we are constantly iterating. And also our sales team, by the way, has gone on a full variable model. Earlier, they used to have a fixed salary plus variable. Now they are on full variable model. So that is also helping us push for higher productivity in the timeshare sales. And our resorts, you may not have gone, but if you go there and, you know, you realize that the resorts quality is par excellence. And therefore, when people come to resorts, the timeshare sales conversions are very, very good. So that is one. The other good news that has happened is the Canary Islands, you know, is now doing extremely well. And we have, you know, we had a change of the leadership there. One of our old chief resort officer from here, who was in Mahindra Holidays, is now the CEO there. So he is also turning around the Canaries business. And so I'm very, very confident that both Finland Canaries will do very well. Sweden, yes, we have to keep an eye on it. It's still not out of the woods. But at the combination level, the group, HCR group, will deliver definitely much higher number than this. And yes, our aim is to cross this 12 million euro EBITDA sooner than later, because that was the high, and we are aiming and itching to get there.
Sure, sir. Very, very helpful. If I can have a small follow-up on HCRO. One last follow-up.
Go ahead. Go ahead, Anuj.
How much is the CapEx involved, or annual CapEx at HCRO level?
Okay. Himanshu, the good news is that the CapEx in HCRO is very, very small, and that too in IT assets and little bit of refurbishment of the resorts. Fundamentally, they spend money on building the timeshare apartments, which is actually not CapEx, because what they do is they build and they sell. So it's inventory. It is in current assets. So if you look at the balance sheet of timeshare-
Okay.
The inventory is lying in current assets, and that is where the money, obviously, when you sell, the money will come. So if your cash is locked in, it is locked in inventory, not in the depreciation as in CapEx. The CapEx per se. Yeah, so you should treat this inventory as stock in trade, like you see in other companies. And if you look at CapEx per se, it is, I mean, we'll give you the numbers. Ram will have the numbers. How much?
It is 3-4 million.
3-4 million euros. It's pretty basic, just to get some bit, little bit of some improvement in some resorts. And IT CapEx is quite big there, because information technology spends are reasonably high there, because they are constantly improving their information technology. So CapEx is not at all a problem for us in this business.
Got it, sir. This was very, very helpful. And, congratulations for almost a decade stint at Mahindra Holidays, and all the best for your new venture at Pidilite. It was pleasure interacting with you, sir. That's it from my side.
Thank you, Himanshu.
Thanks.
Thank you very much. The next question is from the line of Pankaj Kumar from Kotak Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good evening, sir. Congratulations on very good numbers. Sir, question is on the room additions that we are looking at in FY 25. If you can give us some sense, like, what would be the room additions that we are looking for in the year?
So, as I mentioned to Himanshu earlier, neither on the member additions nor on the inventory additions we give any guidance. Reason is very simple. As a policy, we believe in having very, very high targets, and we try to obviously. And that is why when you see our record over the years, we have been consistently scaling up inventory, member additions, and consistently growing the business, including deferred revenue, which to my mind, is a gold mine in our business. Coming back to your straight question, our aim is to be 10,000. Obviously, everything cannot come towards the end. Now, one way to look at is that will we give even, you know, we are left with, say, 6 years, and will we be delivering, you know, let's say 5,300, whatever number we have delivered, minus 10,000 divided by 6? No. It will definitely not be fully back-ended, but it cannot be front-ended either. So what we do in inventory, I will share with you so that you understand what is the difficulty in giving the guidance. There are, at this moment of time, greenfield projects coming. With certain level of certainty, we can say that they will come in or not in this year, depending on what the progress is. The second one is that we are always expanding our existing resorts, again, subject to permissions. Third, we are trying to start new greenfield projects, again, subject to permission. Fourth, we are doing leasing of new resorts, again, subject to availability to the Club Mahindra standards. Fifth, there are resorts that are being built by others for us, so that's another thing. Sixth, there are a couple of acquisitions, as I speak, are going on. If some of them materialize, we could have a very high number of member addition, sorry, inventory additions. But if they don't materialize, then obviously the inventory additions are not going to be much higher than what they are today. So what happens really is that you put, and there are PPP engagements that we are doing. Some of them have materialized. For example, Harihareshwar materialized this year. Now, obviously, we'll have to do the work and commission that resort, and that will take some time. So it will come most likely in FY26, not in FY25. So as we speak, there are many, many things which are there, which are, being worked on. So that's why I gave you a very clear message that 835 odd crores capex is underway. Obviously, our aim, and I have mentioned this earlier, is that we are going to spend about 4,500 crores in capex over, the next, by 2030. And obviously, everything cannot be spent in 2030. So we will have to sort of grade it and ramp it up. So there are many things which are today in motion, including buying of new lands. Okay? So, really speaking, it will depend on some cases, approvals, some cases, execution ability. But the good news which I want to give you is that we are not capital constrained. A lot of people do not deliver their targets because they are capital constrained. We are not capital constrained at all. We have 1,383 crores of cash. We generated, you can see the operating cash that we have generated from the balance sheet, upwards of 500 crores. So we have a very good cash generating ability. Therefore, capital is not the constraint. The constraint is approvals. The constraint is execution on the ground. So some things will come, if not in FY25, they'll come in FY26. But we remain, and you may notice that whatever we say, when we said we will hit 5,000 by so-and-so year, we actually achieved 1 year earlier. When we say 10,000 will happen by 2030, it will happen by 2030 or maybe a little earlier. So I think that is the way to really see this business. And we are in the business for long term, and we are not actually too worried about in one quarter if there is an extra or a little less.
Got it. Second question is on the resort income side. We have seen in this quarter, it has grown at 7.4%. And though we are at a highest occupancy, and the member additions are also growing at a double digit rate. So if you can throw some light on the resort income side, how we should look at going ahead.
Yeah, so resort income, you should definitely look at a growth higher than what we have delivered this year. Why? Because we got hit in the Himachal Pradesh, Uttarakhand, Sikkim. We would have done even higher occupancy. We would have even done higher revenue had it not been for these events that happened. Plus the acceleration of these 387 rooms which has come at different points in time. The full effect of that will be seen in the coming year. Right? So we have been now every year adding 360, 370, 380, 400 roughly rooms. So the cumulative effect will begin to come out in FY25. We are aiming to increase our F&B spends per room night also. There is a lot of activity going on there. There's a project going on internally. We have a corporate chef who is driving newer initiatives on the culinary side. So I am very confident that the resort revenue, if you look at a CAGR for a certain period, I think say 5-year period or something like that, we may be upwards of 12-13%. So this is a bit of an aberration this year, where we have done approximately 7-odd%. So what happens is that these things, like if last year we added Treehouse, which was one of the resorts in Jaipur, it came in the middle of the, let's say, year. It has not fully ramped up. So I am a believer that, and also this particular resort, which I'm mentioning, is in a subsidiary company. So it's not showing in, the revenue of that is not shown in here in the standalone results which you're looking at. So what is happening for us is that there are some of the resorts are now in the, because of the way the company is structured, including these PPP projects, are going to be in subsidiary companies. So we'll have to probably start looking at the total revenue, how it is growing when we are investing in various subsidiary companies through the for buying of resorts, etc. But the big picture which I am giving you is that as inventory acceleration happens, which is beginning to happen already now, our resort revenues will grow faster than they grew this year, number one. Number two, we have anyway at a CAGR level delivered about 12, 13, 14%. At one point of time, I used to see 14%. Now it may be slightly lower because of this year. Plus, if there are no natural calamities, which I mentioned, we will definitely see higher occupancies and therefore again higher resort revenues. So multiple levers need to be pressed here, and we are pressing all the levers.
Sir, one reason, because in Q4 also we have seen 7.4%, maybe because we are adding more leased property, particularly on the associate properties that we are adding, where the resort income might be lower than our own property. Is that the right understanding?
So always when you go on, and you know the hotel industry model, when you go on your own property, your obviously the top line comes to you, the profits land in your, you know, bucket. When you go for, you know, let's say some kind of inventory setup that we do through the associate properties, but lease property is as good as own property. So we are constantly adding lease, own. See, if you look at this year, you know, we did this Jaipur acquisition, that's our own. We expanded our Sonora, that is our own, right? We also added dry leases, which means we are paying rentals and the whole thing comes to us. Yes, we added few associate properties where the income doesn't come to us, it's a cost to us. But if you really look at it, the fact that we are creating choice for the customer, when we create choice for the customer using all these tools, we are also able to accelerate member addition. So this business has to be somehow seen as a whole, rather than in parts. So everything serves a purpose. But you are right, at an overall level, the resort revenue, since our focus is greenfield, our focus is brownfield, our focus is leases, and obviously, when you do this acceleration, then the associate properties obviously will come down significantly, and therefore you will see a higher resort revenue growth in the future.
That's the last question, if I may.
Go ahead.
So on the other expenses, we have seen 19% growth in the quarter. So any one-off in that?
Other expenses, 19%. Ram, would you like to add and give any color here? In quarter four, he says.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Ram.
So in other expenses, so Pankaj, if you see in the, see what happens in consolidated results, whatever borrowing you do outside India, and if it is at lower rate of interest, there is an inter-transfer of interest cost or finance cost to other expenses that is under Ind AS 23. So there is an impact of that, basically. If you see the overall number, our EBITDA and other numbers are growing, but there is an inter-transfer between the two line items.
This is with respect to the standalone, I was asking.
In with respect to standalone, what happens when you have the resort income going up, right? So in resort income, the way we do the accounting, similarly, the expenses also increase in resort expenses, and that they are.
Yeah. So it's with respect to the resort expenses.
Yeah. So for example, in the resort income has gone up from, say, 84.7 crore last year, quarter four, to 94 crore in standalone, right? So correspondingly, you have a resort expenses, which is categorized under other expenses.
Okay, got it. Thank you. Thanks, Pankaj.
Thank you very much. The next question is from the line of Nilesh Shah from Julius Baer Group. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Are you able to hear me?
Yes, we can hear you, Nilesh.
Okay. Okay, great, great. Sir, yeah, you know, I think, yeah, you know, I would just love to get your perspective on something. So, I mean, yeah, you know, one thing that I have often struggled with respect to Mumbai holidays is the fact that in our business, right, Akhi, yeah, you know, the way accounting happens, right, is fairly complex, right? So, sir, yeah, you know, given that you have spent a good sort of 10 years with this company, right? You know, from that experience, right, what should be a critical, you know, metric, right, that you would, yeah, you know, highlight, that, yeah, you know, that we as investors and, yeah, you know, and the wider management team should look forward to, right? I know that, yeah, you know, would cash, would OCF be that number? Right, just please, if you could, reflect on your sort of time here and, share some perspective, right? What should be the right metric that should be like the North Star, may not be one, but you could share a few that we should look forward to.
Okay. You made two comments, I think. The first comment is that accounting is a little complex, and I would urge you to spend some time with our CFO, understand the accounting, because while it is complex, consistently now the accounting standard has been in use for more than 5 years, so you can see how we have sort of delivered on all metrics. But if you ask me as operating people, the matrices that we are very, very paranoid about is, number one, the member additions, which leads to the cumulative member growth. The second one is, are we bringing in enough inventory? Because the last thing we want is inventory lagging behind, because that can lead to a different problem. And these are two very, very critical operating matrices that we track. The third one, which we track, and that is why it's there in the investor deck also, is, are we adding to the deferred revenue? Because if we are taking money out of the revenue, deferred revenue, because of the accrual, we have to add more than what we take out. So that is something that we are very, very careful about, that we should be constantly adding. Obviously, if the member additions are good and you are growing, you will see the deferred revenue growing as well. Obviously, at a certain cost, we need to add members, which I explained to Himanshu how we have brought down the cost of acquisition. Then obviously, the cost that is also getting deferred is lesser, and therefore the net deferred revenue is another number which we look at. The third metric, the fourth metric is obviously the cash that we generate. And the cash generation in this business is a function of how do we handle our receivables. And we are in a very good shape there. So collections are very critical, both the EMIs as well as the annual fee collections. Those are very, very critical for us. Otherwise, the ECLs can hit us, estimated credit loss can hit us. And when we are taking in members, we want to take members who commit higher down payment. That leads to a very healthy business, because higher down payment paying member is more committed and equally likely to spend more money at the resorts. The other metric that we look at internally from a long-term standpoint of view is that how much are we able to engage with members, as I mentioned, in terms of the spends that they do at the resort, equally the referrals they give us, and also the fact, as I was saying, that how regularly they holiday, because people who holiday regularly also pay us the annual fee in time. So for us, annual fee collections, EMI membership fee collections, ensuring that the receivables don't age, or they are not overdue beyond a point. The fact that we are adding members, good quality members who will spend money at the resorts. The fact that we are generating significant cash. Okay. And obviously, CapEx, if you're talking of free cash, that's to my mind not a worry, because we have enough cash. Even if we spend a little more in a year, we are adding inventory for the future, which means we are creating capacity for the future, technically. So for us, free cash is not such a worrisome thing. How much cash?
Yeah.
And more importantly, are we using our capital to work better? Which means if we put out a resort, are we able to fill it up? So for us, occupancy is a very important metric, because in another hotel business, if you are a little low on occupancy, you will push up the ADRs. We don't have the opportunity to push the ADRs, because ours is a pre-sold membership. So our aim is to push occupancy, therefore the F&B. So resort revenue is largely F&B and the activity. So a lot of activity revenues also we push. So resort teams are all the time working on to ensure that the revenues, they are pushing higher and higher without the room revenue. Because room revenue is very limited in our case. So these are the things that we internally look at to keep the business on a very, very robust path. Because I have practically covered the entire business and the critical elements in the business that need to be looked at beyond simple income, EBITDA, PBT and PAT.
Right. Okay. Great. Just, sir, one last thing, right? Sir, how have you seen, I think that from a consumer behavior point of view, right, two, three things have happened, right? I think if we go back a few years, right, this industry used to have a lot of, unregulated players or, not so serious players, right? And people lost a bit of money and there was a bit of apathy in that. And then we saw that travel demand has come back and hotel rates have gone through the roof. So therefore, there is a strong consumer demand once again. But we are also seeing that, how consumers pay, right? It seems you're also saying that the share of EMI, has kind of come back, right? So, so, I mean, as you look forward, right, do you expect, right, the consumer sort of behavior, to be supportive towards, what we are doing in right? And, and the second question is, from a competitive intensity point of view, do you believe this, this sort of purple patch to continue?
Okay. Many questions in one, though. Let me try to answer them one by one. The first thing is the consumer behavior that you highlighted. Over the last 3 to 4 years, you may have noticed we have launched new products. We have a 15-year product today. We obviously have a product for seniors. When I say seniors, 55 and above. So people who are, have all the time. It's a points-based product. It's a product called Bliss. That's a 10-year product. And we have also, and earlier we used to have only 25-year products. So we have this 15 and 10, it's for seniors. And we have another product, which is a 3-year product, which is GoZest, which is without any annual fee. It is meant for people to sample and then upgrade their membership with us. And then we have a 4-year product also with annual fee. So if you really look at it, we have tried to cover the life stages. When you are young and you are not probably wanting to commit, you could come with either 3 or 4-year product. And as you sort of move ahead in your life, you could look at a 25-year product or a 15-year product when you are having children. And then as you are sort of, if you are coming into our system at the age of, say, 55, 60, then you could look at clearly Bliss, which is a 10-year product. And then, so what happens is if you look at life stages, we have pretty much covered all the life stages, and therefore behaviors, which used to worry us that people will then, they won't buy 25, they would want options. We have done that, and one of the biggest fears we had was there'll be heavy cannibalization. The good news is it hasn't happened because there is value proposition depending on the life stage you are in all of these products. So our team has very, very smartly been able to sell all and at a fairly brisk pace also, as you saw in terms of the milestone member additions that we did. The other big deal in our business is even if you are not able to afford a product at a certain price point, we have, of course, we have laddered the price points. I mean, you name a price point, we have a product there. That's another thing that we have done. The second thing is that people upgrade. The best part for us is that the more you stay with us, the more you think that, oh, I must be able to holiday in an upper season. Or if I'm an upper season member, I can go down season and holiday a number of days increases in our case because it works like that. So we see a lot of upgrades. And then what we do is also in terms of engagement, we expect our members to do member get member. And they also get obviously great, rewards as a result of doing that. We have a very good loyalty reward program for the existing members when they are able to recommend a member and the member signs up. So the point is that as far as the behavior is concerned, people are looking at vacation ownership because also, not only because of the inflationary pressures that you mentioned, but because of the unique selling proposition, which is a larger apartment size where the entire family can stay. Studio, one bedroom, two bedroom, which is something that people forget often. And the second thing is there are enough number of activities in the resorts which people can engage in at various life stages of theirs. I mean, if you are an elder person, you do different things. If you are younger, you do different things. We have activities for all. I'm not, and I'm enumerating them because they're all there on our website because, you know, that will take away time from maybe other people who may want to ask the question. So the point here is that our proposition is very unique. We are in the resort business, we are in timeshare business, vacation ownership business, we are creating activities, and as a result, we are catering to all life stages, and we see multi-generational family holidays happening, 3 to 4 generations holidaying together. That proposition is very unique. And you are right, a lot of flyby or even smaller players have vanished, because this business actually is built on only one fundamental thing, which is trust. And Mahindra Group with the brand Club Mahindra has garnered the trust. And we are right now in our 28th or 29th year of running. So we have stood the test of time. So we are going to be around, and people know that we are going to be around, and therefore people are willing to sign up for us. And that is why, you know, our proposition will remain very differentiated, very unique compared to any other player who might want to come in. Timeshare or vacation ownership as a category will always survive and grow, given the affluence and also the availability of disposable income that people have. A set of customers will find it very attractive. A set of customers will think that I don't want to commit even for 3 years. And that is fine, because each product, every category is not meant for every customer. So if you think from life stage angle, if you think from behavior angle, if you think from the customer value proposition angle, if you think from the fact that we are in these inflationary times a great option for people, because people are enjoying in our holidays without paying for the increased, obviously, tariffs and the GSTs. Obviously, they are saving hugely. And to my mind, that is a very unique value proposition, and there is none like us. And the other part which I did not mention earlier also is that the network effect. Today we have more than 100 resorts where members can go, and this is going to become 150, 200, whatever. Including international, we are already at 150. The point is that more you add to the network, more the power of the network increases. And therefore you get again attract more members. That is the beauty of the model, which is very unique. It generates cash. It generates confidence in us to invest in more resorts. So it's a great business model from a consumer standpoint, from our standpoint. But it is not an easy model to replicate, because you need to build trust. And without trust, this business cannot stand. So therefore, talking of behavior, consumers want to trust brands who are going to be around them for a long time and will give them value over a long time, but not just for them, but for their entire families, including the multi-generations with which they holiday. I mean, I'll just complete
it. Thanks a lot, sir. Thanks a lot, you know.
Okay.
I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. A reminder to all the participants to press star and 1 to ask a question. Thank you. The next question is from the line of Pranav from Rare Enterprises. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Thanks a lot. Can you hear me?
Yes, Pranav, we can hear you.
Yes. First of all, best of luck for your next assignment, and I'm really happy to have shared this time in Club Mahindra with you. Sir, I just have one question or suggestion as related to the previous participant's question. So there is a metric called embedded value that these insurance companies actually publish. And our business is exactly like insurance, where we have to pay commissions upfront, and the value of the benefit is accrued to the member to 25 years. So if our accounting team along with some consultant can come out with a metric very near to embedded value, that will be a great indicator to whoever is confused about the value. And even I am confused, because the calculation is a little bit complex. And if you can do it, that will be a really helpful metric to establish a value anchor. That's it. And thanks a lot, sir.
Yeah. No, Pranav, I remember meeting you, thoroughly enjoyed talking to you, and I know you always come up with great suggestions, and this is again one of those. More than questions, you give suggestions which shows your commitment to the business. So I want to answer this on the embedded value. See, embedded value calculation in our business is slightly different from insurance, because in insurance, it's about the premiums and commissions and period. In our business, because of the multiple touch points, whether it is the resort, whether it is the annual fee, whether it is the F&B spends, whether it is the referrals that the members can give, it's an exercise that can be done and should be done. We have tried doing that in the past, but we have not been very sure of the assumptions, because at the end of the day, when you put out anything in public domain, you should be very, very sure that it will play out. And to be honest, the exercise is still on. And I think my inputs to the new team would be to complete this exercise. We could not complete it because, you know, we were a little bit tied up because we had interim CFO and he had many things on his plate. And now we have a new CFO also coming in. So I think this is an exercise worth doing, but bringing it out in public domain requires thorough diligence and a very, very solid backing that indeed this is the embedded value that will play out. Because the last thing you want is to bring out anything in public domain and later on say that these assumptions did not, you know, bear out and therefore the embedded value was not correct. So that's being in Mahindra Group. We are very, very mindful and conscious, and therefore we have done work in this area that I can confirm to you. But we are not yet there. But it's a very worthy suggestion of pursuing.
Perfect, sir. Perfect, sir. Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot. I appreciate a lot whatever contributions you have done to the group.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. A reminder to all the participants, you can press star and one to ask a question. Thank you. The next question is from the line of Ankit Kanodia from Smart Sync Services. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Thanks for taking my question and congratulations on good set of numbers all around. Sir, my first question is related to the answer you gave to, I think, the first question where you mentioned about the corporate employee membership plan. If I remember correctly, sir, about 10 years back or maybe even further, there was something like this. Can you just throw some more light as to how different it is this time, or is it exactly the same?
I think I should have explained a little better. So we have a corporate plan where a corporate can buy, a product called Corporate Fun Days. And that has been in existence, as you rightly said, more than 10 years. And some of the corporates that are marquee names are our members anyway, wherein they send their employees as a part of their perk or their rewards and recognition program and they holiday with us. That happens. That is continuously being driven every year. And obviously the Corporate Fun Days plan works in a bit of a sporadic manner, because sometimes the deals happen, sometimes the deals don't happen, and the corporate has to really think of this as an employee benefit. So therefore that's a separate product and a plan. The new idea that I was presenting today was that we are going to chase retail sales with the corporate employees. For example, a corporate X, we go to them and say that, listen, we are going to give a very special offer for your employees and they will be able to holiday at our resorts if they bought any of these plans. And all corporate has to do is to give us access. And once they give us access, we don't need the employee database. Everything goes through the corporate. And whoever shows interest, that obviously information comes to us and then we pitch to the. And sometimes we actually go and put up a kiosk or a big counter at the corporate's office or factory. Or so, for example, let me give you examples also. So some of the public sectors, we have faced huge success. You know, if you go to these public sectors, which have huge colonies, the people are very keen. They have spending power. They are living in smaller places. They are generating huge amount of income, but nowhere to spend. We have seen huge amount of, you know, uptake happening in these big complexes of public sectors. So that is what I meant, where we go to the retail, basically the employees, and they get an extra benefit because they are employees of that corporate. And that gives us bulk sales, and that gives us better word of mouth, and that gives us better referrals. That is what I meant when I said corporate sales.
And this you started last year only? That is
yes,
what you mean.
FY24 this has started and we have got very good response.
Would you like to put some numbers into it?
No, we don't split the numbers by the channel of sales. This is another channel of sales for us.
Okay. So if I got it correctly, basically you give them some discount and you get more volumes here.
So it is not just about discount, it is about service, because when they know that, oh, this is being, you know, people are coming through, first of all, Mahindra Group. Second, their own company internal mailer, which we create, which says that, you know, because you are a member of this company or an employee of this company, you are getting this special offer. And more importantly, when they are also booking and they are planning their holidays, we have our team supporting them. As well as when they are at the resort, it's not that they get any extra treatment, but the fact that they are our corporate customers, once they are happy, they obviously through word of mouth, we are able to get other corporates also, because then they talk to their friends in other corporates. And that is how we are able to penetrate. And if one person leaves from one corporate and goes to the other corporate, we are able to even enter into a new corporate because of the good experience that we create. So it's a very, the most important reason is that this is a qualified database in a way, you know. This is people who have the regular earning power. They are least affected, least is the wrong word, but they don't get easily affected because of the up or the downturn in the economy, unlike a businessman, small businessman, or, you know, people who are self-employed. So that way, we are going after the affluent, which have the reasonable level of disposable income to be able to buy this product. So it gets us filtered people who will be interested. And then they have a lifestyle. See, ours is a lifestyle product. They have a lifestyle for taking vacations with their family. So they anyway take vacations. So it's from a fit point of view, this is a beautiful target audience for us.
Right. Thank you so much, sir, for explaining this in detail. So my next question would be related to the government projects which we have encountered or initiated in the last couple of years. If you can throw some more light as to how do you see that progressing in FY25 based on your experience in FY24?
Yeah, so we did the government PPP. We started in FY23. We started with one resort in Janjeli in Himachal, which Himachal government came to us on a BOT basis, which we took. This year we have got the success by the fact that MTDC Harireshwar has come in our bag. Plus, we have been clearly given a nod on the lands that we have identified in Odisha. Two pieces of land, one in Chilka Lake and another near a beach. So, plus, we have been able to work with Uttarakhand government, signed an MOU, and actually some land pieces have been identified. They are finalizing their policy of land allotment, obviously, which has to be, which will be finalized by them in their cabinet. We signed an MOU with the Indian government in terms of facilitation of our investments in Tamil Nadu. We are working very closely with Karnataka government as we speak, JNK as we speak, Rajasthan government. Our idea is to work with governments to see what would they want and in line with what we want, and therefore can there be a win-win. Obviously, each project is different. Like Harireshwar is all about rebuilding the whole property and expanding it and, you know, taking it on a long lease and offering it to, obviously, our members. So every deal is different because the objectives are different. But the good part is you are dealing with government. You are sort of, everything is transparent, open to whatever they are, you know, whether it is a bidding process or this or that. So what it does for us is it gives us a quicker ramp up in our inventory. Our objective to do this PPP is to ramp up our inventory faster than what we could do otherwise.
Got it. Thank you so much, sir. And sir, in one of the recent brokers meet, our top management people mentioned something like this, that we are exploring growth opportunities in subscription-based model. Is my understanding correct? Are we looking something in that area?
I would not be able to comment because I am not able to understand what you are saying, because ours is anyway a subscription-based model. We have an upfront commitment and then an annual fee. That's the model we anyway operate today. So I'm not able to relate to your question as of now.
Sure. I'll get back to you on email.
Sure.
Related to the question sometime.
Sure.
Later.
Sure.
So one last point. A couple of participants already talked about that, which is the matrix. You already very clearly explained about the operational matrix which you at MHRI look at. But when it comes to investors, is it right to think, I'm just asking you, I may be completely wrong, where we are in a business where all our costs are front loaded and our incomes are distributed over 25 years or 15 years depending upon the size of the tenure of the membership. Cash flow from operation or maybe free cash flow could be the right metric to judge as an investor, because cash flow is what will give us an idea as to how many members are coming and given you cash and how much you can invest that cash for new inventory, and how we can also track numbers like this deferred revenue. Would you like to comment on that? Would that be the right metric for investors?
So I would say that, and I mentioned this already, that cash is definitely an important metric for us internally as well as externally. We talk about it a lot. Second is deferred revenue. You could also look at deferred cost and net deferred revenue, which we calculate internally. And the other thing which is very, very important for us to deliver profitability, including obviously generation of cash, is how well we are engaging with our members, and that is where occupancy is very critical. It may be an operational metric, but very, very critical metric for us because we know how it affects our business. The other thing is that cash is also generated when you are able to get members with higher down payment. I mean, same number of members, if they came with lower down payment, you will not generate enough cash. So I agree with you, cash, deferred revenue are very critical matrices apart from the operational matrices that we talked about. And the other thing for us, which is sometimes not properly understood, is that, you know, how are we really keeping our costs in control? Again, it affects cash. I'm agreeing with you. And therefore, particularly the costs of acquisition, because those are very important costs for us and how we have very smartly brought down those costs. So I look at business as a whole, so my habit is to go into literally all the angles. But if you want to remain focused on financials apart from income, EBITDA, PBT, PAT, definitely deferred revenue and cash are the two additional metrics which should be sort of seen by you to see how we are doing. And these are the ones which we have been doing very well, actually, year on year. Even in the last year, we delivered very, very good numbers on these. And you're right, sometimes they get missed in this whole discussion.
Thank you so much, sir, and all the best for the future.
Thank you very much. In the interest of time, we will conclude the call. I will now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Singh for closing comments. Over to you, sir.
Right. First of all, I would like to thank all the participants. We really appreciate the fact that even despite the fact that we were not able to upload the investor deck as well as the results, sufficiently ahead of time, I saw very significant participation, significant interest. I have always said that, you know, we as a team learn from these interactions, and it keeps us sharp. Based on your questions, we also think on various things that may have escaped our attention. And I have made this point all through in all my analyst calls that I, along with my team, we end up learning a lot, and we really enjoy your continued patronage. And I want to confirm this to you that the company is on a very solid footing with the deferred revenue, cash on hand, as well as the plans of doubling the inventory. So on that note, I would like to say thanks to all of you for this particular session and the time that I've spent with you in the earlier sessions. Thank you.
On behalf of Mahindra Holidays and Resorts India Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.